Okay, Chevra, it is a treat to be together for our West Coast, East Coast showdown. I have the schuss of joining Ray Gorman in sharing personal experiences and reflections on how we find HaKadosh Baruch Hu and thoughts that each of us hopefully can use, the frameworks, ways of thinking and feeling that may be helpful for each of us as we continue to grow in our knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and belief of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and our experience of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Gorm is representing the West Coast from the great state of California. I'm representing the East Coast, New York, New Jersey zone. And I figured that Kedusha Shabbos, Yom Tif, Yom Kippur, Shemitah, every single Kedusha Sazman comes to L.A. hours before it comes to the East Coast. It's only appropriate that we should hear first from Rabbi Gorman. I think what we're going to do, Rabbi Gorman's going to present some thoughts. I'll present some thoughts, and we'll hopefully leave around 10 minutes or so at the end for the chevra to ask questions, to interact, to think together. Rabbi Gorman Shlita.
Okay, shalom, shalom, everybody. What a pleasure this is to be together and to share a table with Rabbi Cohen. It's really, really, it's a special opportunity for me. When the title of this shiur, this experience, was thrown our way, it was very interesting. What do we do? It's some type of like versus thing. Us versus them. East versus West. There's a lot of verses sometimes when it comes to Yiddishkeit. I'm not talking about like psukim. Not that type of verses. Verses like a battle. I can tell you for sure the only battle that I'm interested in being for sure with Rabbi Cohen or any of us is the Milchemes HaYetzer. And please God, we'll fight that well. So as I see it, it's not like a... If you came here to find out who's better, West Coast versus East Coast, that's not what this is, because it's very clear that the West Coast is better. We don't need to have a conversation about that. So hopefully what we can do is... we can have a good time, right? Is to try to figure out, not just... Not West Coast versus East Coast, but who are you? Who am I? How do we figure out who my authentic self is? And when I can bring myself, my authentic self, to my Avodas Hashem, that's unbelievable. Then it's you. No longer am I a lemming? Am I just checking boxes because this is what I do? There's boxes in my life to check, so I just sort of check them without really thinking it through. But to say there's me and my authentic self is all in, it's a different life. Putting tefillin on as an individual, putting tefillin on as a thoughtful human, putting tefillin on as a person who's connected to a masorah of very holy people that put tefillin on is very different than, I don't know, I wake up and put tefillin on at 8 because that's what they said to do. And then leaving because that's when breakfast is. And then going to shir because when shir is. Different experience. So, perhaps over the next couple of minutes, we can explore a means of finding our own authentic self. It's something that I shared a couple of months ago, actually, with the Madrachim in America. So, what I'm going, hopefully, to do is through a Mishnah in Avos, we're going to lay out a prescription to begin to think about who I am. Who is the me? One of the reasons, many different reasons brought from different thinkers as to why in the Bavli there is no Daf Aleph. A lot of different ideas. So perhaps one could be that Aleph stands for Ani. Me. I'm bringing myself in. When I bring myself to learn, not just I'm going through the motions, I'm reading the words, and then I'm leaving. But I'm all in. I'm putting myself into this sugya. Then it's a different experience. So with that in mind, I'd like to dive into the Mishnah. Very first Mishnah, the third Perek in Avos, that I believe sets up a prescription for us to find our own authentic selves. And we bring our own authentic self into Avodas Hashem, it's an elevated experience. Akavya ben Mahalal Omer, he says, Histakel b'shloisha devarim. Look really carefully, really examine well. Not just see. Not just put on your tefillin. See, understand, look deeply at these three things. And then you won't come to sin. You won't come to do the wrong thing. What does he say? Dama ayin basa, know where you came from, ul'anata hoylech, and know where you're going, v'lifnei mi'ata asid liten din v'cheshven. And one day, know before whom you're going to have to make an accounting. And the Mishnah gives answers to each of these questions of know where you came from, know where you're going, and know before whom you're going to have to make an accounting of your soul. What does the Mishnah say? To answer the questions. Na'ayim basa, where'd you come from? Metipa srucha, a coarse biological answer. You're just a couple of cells. That's where we come from. A couple of cells are nothing. It's not necessarily the most inspirational NCSYKOL type of Torah. It's Torah, and we're going to try to figure out, what is this? What is this trying to teach us? Coarse biological answer. Next one, Ulana Tahoylech, and where are you going? Limkoyim Alpha Rima Vesaleya. Coarse biological answer. You're going to be worm food. After 120, it's not, again, not an inspirational type of thing, but could be grounding. Could help for certain people. And then the last question, before whom are you going to have to make the calculation? After 120, we're going to have to make an accounting of our soul. What did we do? What did we do right? What did we do wrong? Why did we do it? And have to account for ourselves. What's going on here? So with these three questions, I believe, if we take those coarse biological answers and that sort of philosophical pillar of, at the end, spiritual pillar of a recognition that we're going to have to answer for our choices at the end of the day, and dial back just a drop, then perhaps we can start to understand ourselves a little bit more. What do I mean by that? Know where you came from. Before the coarse biological answer of you were just a couple of cells, before that, who are your parents? Where did they meet? Who are their parents? Who are their rebbeim? What places in the world did they come from? Looking around, I see there are, you can tell, there are different types of people from different types of places in the world. There's Ashkenazim and Sephardim and Hasidim and all types of people come to NC Swaikolo. It's beautiful. I've had a lot of people come up to me over the summer, like, hey, I think it's because I have payas. My great-grandfather was a Chassid. Beautiful. Beautiful, let's dance. Right? That's great. The question isn't just that of historical, oh, I know I have in a book somewhere, I might have a picture or a drawing, my great-great-grandfather. How did he live? And what does that mean for me as a Jew living wherever I live, in Teaneck or Los Angeles or Chicago or Dallas or wherever I live, what does that mean that your great-grandfather was a chassid or Rosh Yeshiva or a simple Jew? What does that mean? What does that mean to you? What did, let's say if I'm from LA, there's a lot of Persians. Any Persians here? Ah, beautiful. So there's such a beautiful, rich Persian culture. And very often, and you can swap out Persian with wherever you come from. What was that? 3 generations ago, 2 generations ago, maybe 1, it depends who you are. Most of us not more than 3, sometimes 4, but if you're living in America as a Jew, you can't go back too many generations before you leave America. What did Shabbos look like in their house? Where did you come from in a real way? And to understand that, not just that I'm a historian. That's very nice, you should know things, but what does that mean to me? What zmiros did my great-great-great-grandfather sing? And do I sing them? If I don't, why not? To understand, not as a tzivu, not as you have to do, we should have a dracha from our parents and our rebbeim, but to understand what's going on there and what's different. Where did I come from? Next one. La'anat ha'olech, where are you going? After 120, we have the answer, the coarse biological answer from the Mishnah. But if we dial back just a drop, on your 120th birthday, and there's that great joke. There's only like 5 or 6 rabbi jokes that get on rotation. Right? You know, all year we say at someone's birthday, Ad meva esrim is 120 till 120. So what do you tell someone on the 120th birthday? Have a nice day. Okay. Yeah, some chuckles. Thank you for the pity laugh. I appreciate it. Okay. So on your 120th birthday, you're watching a montage. Right? Maybe you had one for your bar mitzvah where there's like the clip of, oh, this is when he first walked, and this is when he first put on his father's tallis when he was 2, and he looked so cute. And all these images of you growing up until the glorious day of you and your hanachas tefillin, or whatever is the most recent picture they could get in there for the person making the video. Ah, beautiful. The montage. But take the montage and put it at your 120th birthday. What do you want in there? What particulars, life goals, big things, where are you headed? Not the worm food. We're dialing it back just a drop. What do you want to say? Look what I did. That's a totally different life, as opposed to just, I took my left step, and then my right step, and then my left step, and then my right step. where are you going? What does that look like? What does your family look like? What do your grandchildren look like? Your great-great-grandchildren? Maybe even another great if you're blessed in such a way. What does that look like? What type of accomplishments did you, your friends, your chevra, your spouse, please God, one day, and your children, and whatever community or the entirety of the Jewish world that you had a hashpa on, a positive effect, what was that? And when everybody's watching, what things are they clapping? And what things are you like, oh, I wish they edited that out. Where are you headed? What does that look like? It's a different life. So one is, where'd you come from? Next is, where are you going in a very real way? What are your goals? Big life goals. And again, if you write something down today, it doesn't mean you're stuck in that forever. You're not saying, I swear there's all types of language in Maseches Nedarim and all types of things. We're not doing that. We're contemplating. We're thinking deep. Maybe in a year or two, your perspective might change. But if it changes from a meaningful place, that's beautiful. And lastly, in the last couple of minutes, before I hand it over to Rabbi Cohen, is the before whom do you make a din v'cheshbon? Ultimately, Hashem is the judge. Full stop. I don't want to say anything that borders on kfira or anything else like that. But this concept of dialing it back just a little bit. In this world, there are people, there are definitely people who judge us. And sometimes that might even be good. But we should be the deciders of, is that positive or not? I love saying the following line. Peer pressure is awesome. What? How could that be awesome? Peer pressure, that usually means pulling into things that are negative and drugs. Peer pressure is awesome so as long as your peers are awesome. If your peers are awesome, peer pressure is awesome. You keep good chevra, you're going to be on a growth trajectory. If you don't, you probably won't. It's a much harder fight to fight. So when it comes to others judging you, we're talking about before whom you're going to have to stand, we're talking about ultimately Hashem. But in this world, who are we letting judge us? Who are those 3, 4, maybe 5 people in our life that we know, before I make a call in my life, before I do an action, this person or this person, my Rebbe, my parent, a grandparent, who is that? That I want them to judge me. I want them, not God forbid in a negative way, because I know that they love me and they want what's best for me. And who is that person who I can put in my life and have, even all the way in Tanakh multiple times? We have Gedolei Tanakh thinking about the image of their father. This is not a concept that I'm making up. This comes up throughout Tanakh. Who is that person that we're allowing to judge us? If we say, well, there's this guy on Instagram who thinks XYZ, he doesn't even know who you are. Or I don't know, LeBron James said to wear these shoes. He also doesn't know who you are. If someone doesn't know who you are at all, it might be very challenging for them to love you. Could be possible, but you should really think deeply about that. Does LeBron James really care? I don't mean to call him out in particular, just a person that someone might look up to. Someone who's on your wall. Do they really care about you and love you? Maybe that's for you to figure out. Who are we allowing to judge us? Because it could be a beautiful thing. Peer pressure is beautiful if your peers are beautiful. Judgment can be awesome if it's a Rebbe telling you, you could be better. It might hurt a little bit, but then you grow. So those three things, I believe, if we put them, those three questions, where'd you come from, where are you headed, and before whom do we make a din v'cheshbon, who should we allow to be part of our circle of judgment? If we put them all together, you know a Venn diagram looks like this? So I made up a word. I think I made it up. Yeah, have you ever heard it?
Sounds good.
The Venn triagram. Okay, 1, 2, 3. You have like 3, I can't do it with my fingers. No?
I'll give you a third.
Oh, there we go. Okay, like this. Yeah, it's like a gang sign.
In there.
Okay, so right in the middle. I'm from LA, right? East Coast, West Coast. Ah, we're throwing gang signs. This is not where I thought this was going to go. So if you make a Venn triagram,
never trust those West Coasters.
Right in the middle, where they all overlap, if you use that as your filter for life, I would imagine you can start to see in a more clear way. It doesn't give you absolute psak din. Here's exactly what I have to do. But the clarity of self is much greater. Here's me. Here's where I came from. Here's where I want to be. And here are the people who I know love me, who want me to do great. When you start to use that as a filter for life, I believe it's a much stronger life that you'll be able to live vis-a-vis your connection to the Almighty. And pass it over to Rabbi
Kahn. Wow. Rabbi Gorman, Yashar Koach. You know, Chaver, I've known Rabbi Gorman, I'm thinking for close to a decade. We've been colleagues in a circle, something like that. And, you know, just his, Rabbi Gorman's halach yel, just watching the way he goes through his day, the way he interacts with people, all sorts of people, has been an ongoing source of inspiration for myself and my family for close to a decade. And then there are these moments when I get to hear him teach more extensively, and it, like, totally takes my appreciation of him and my inspiration from him to a new level. And this definitely did not disappoint. I think that's real a lot to think about. Rabbi Gorman was talking about these three circles, three big questions to be asking ourselves. As we were talking before, so we were sort of each coming, Rabbi Gorman and I, with sort of some larger categories that hopefully they're grounded in our Masorah, and hopefully we can each find ourselves in, and you can each find useful sort of thinking and growing and experiencing HaKadosh Baruch Hu as we move forward on our trajectories in life. Rabbi Gorman took us back 2,000 years to Akavim at Mahalalel. We're going to happen in a time machine now and fast forward to around 900, 1,000 years ago to two very famous Rishonim. Two of the very famous early Rishonim who had a lot to say about thinking about Halacha and Gemara, and also thinking about Emuna and thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and thinking about Hashkafa and Emuna. And they are the Rambam and Yehuda HaLevi. Often they seem like they're very different. They both lived in Spain, but Rambam was known as like a thinker and a big Talmud Chacham in Halacha. The Kuzari, Yehuda HaLevi, was known as a poet who loved Eretz Yisrael and was like dying all his life to try to get here. And holding my hand, a sefer written by a Talmud Chacham whom I never met, but myself have been profoundly impacted by. I would not recognize him when I saw him on the street, but his svarim have shaped me a lot over the last 10, 15 years. Rav Yitzchak Shelat is a Rebbe in the Yeshiva in Male Adumim. And he's written a number of svarim that have really elevated me. In my hands, I have Bein HaKuzri LaRambam. Talks about those two people. One seems like a man of the mind. The other one is a man of the heart. And Rav Shelat's basic point is that Gorman was talking before about we sometimes get caught up in the verses. Not the psukim, but the this versus that. So sometimes people like to sort of like, oh, it's like him versus him. And like the Rambam is all in the head and the Kuzri is all in the heart. And Rav Shelat points out if you actually look at the Svarim and think about what they say, there's a lot of overlap. And he actually takes you through 13 different sugyos, big topics, big ideas in Hashkafa, and shows for each one, yeah, there are nuances of difference, but there's a tremendous amount of overlap. Tonight we're talking about Emunah, and that's the first topic in the Sefer. And Rav Shelat opens with a pair of ideas from the Kuzri that I think is we could use to organize so much of our thinking and our growing and our feeling and our learning. And he talks about where does Emunah come from? Our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our experiencing and living with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where does it come from? Is it Raya or is it Re'iyah? Is it proof, Raya? Or is it seeing, experiencing, feeling HaKadosh Baruch Hu? In English, in Hebrew, those words are very, very close to each other. Raya, proof, and Re'iyah, seeing, feeling, experiencing. And the truth is, Rav Shelat says, you know, the stereotype is the Rambam's all into proof, and the poet Yehuda HaLevi and the Kuzri is all to just like feeling and seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the truth is, he says, if you actually look in the Svarim, they both are talking about a blend. A difference of emphasis, a difference what the mix is, but everyone is living, every serious thinking, feeling Jew is living the blend of thinking and seeing. Of knowing HaKadosh Baruch Hu and experiencing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I want to talk just personally about experiences that I've had, and maybe some of them will be some experiences, some reflections, and maybe some will be useful for each of us in our own journey, our own growth. And then we'll open the floor, last couple minutes, to some questions. In thinking about sort of the seeing and the proving, sort of the left brain rational thinking versus the experience and the feeling of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is a mix. It's sort of lie along a spectrum. I think the first thing in terms of like the proving, the logical thinking, personally, there's a line from Talmud Chacham known as Yaakov Emden, lived in the 1700s, that really, really speaks to me a lot. I think it's so much more true now than it was for him in the 1700s, 300 years ago or more. He said, you know, the Rishonim, including the Rambam and the Kuzri, both talk about sort of basing your faith on Yetzias Mitzrayim, on Matan Torah, and he says, back then, 1,000 years ago, 900 years ago, that might have been the greatest source of proof. It's not any less, but there's something else that's grown and grown and grown over the last 1,000 years to overtake them. Talk about a versus. He says, by now, this was in the 1700s, he says, the Jews have survived and thrived so remarkably. Says, it's been, you know, 1,700 years in Galus, since destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, nations have come and gone, empires have come and gone, and the Jews sort of have this like trajectory in history that's totally unlike anything else. We've been without a people, without a place. We've been a people without. We've been a non-dominant people everywhere we've gone for 1,700 years, and we're not just survived; we're thriving. He says that by now in history, Yaakov Emden wrote 300 years ago, that's such an amazing miracle, and by the way, also predicted in the Chumash, that said that's an even stronger source of emuna, he writes, than anything else. And I would say, I think about that a lot, because if that was true in the 1700s, and you maybe some of you are familiar with a famous line from Mark Twain, maybe some of you even hear it or say it, at your Seder, and he wrote in Harper's Magazine, if you care to look it up, in the 1890s, where he wonders, like, you know, the secret of the Jew. He was sort of puzzled, like, why he makes the same point. He leaves that as a question. He's like, I don't get it. Why do the Jews work their way through history different than anyone else? And the truth is, if it was impressive then, it's a million times more impressive 300 plus years later, when we have, on the one hand, survived even more, so many more pogroms, and the Holocaust, and, on the other hand, we've also seen so many, not only the nevuos of Jewish survival in Galus, at odds with the rules of history, even more, we've seen so many positive nevuos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done so much for us over the last 100 plus years. We've seen the unfolding of so many positive nevuos. Rabbi Akiva danced. Rabbi Akiva was smiling when he could imagine which positive nevuah, that one day there'll be old people and young people relaxing and enjoying themselves in Yerushalayim. We get to see that. For centuries, Jews were davening for the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring Jewish people back to Eretz Yisrael from all over the world. Go back over 100 years ago, there were 6,000 Jews in Eretz Yisrael, then 60,000, then 600,000, and now way more than 6 million. Jews have come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has brought Jews back to Eretz Yisrael from every part of the globe. And the list goes on and on and on and on. The only time that a dead language came back to life to become the spoken language of millions of people, the only time in recorded human history, and the list goes on and on. Studying history, you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in history so powerfully once you open your eyes. It is remarkable. So that's one type of certain terms of thinking about it logically and just noticing, wow. You know, I have a soft spot in my heart for science. Some of you who know me may know that. For math and science, and you might think science. Ah, so there's your cold logical proof in thinking. The truth is, for me, it was one of the greatest re'iyah experience moments. of my first 3 years at YU. My first 3 years at YU was both in the Beis Marish and college, as opposed to 27 years since. And I've retained my fascination for science and all sorts of things, but been formally totally in the Beis Medrash. You know, I think one of my, just personally, one of my greatest spiritual experiences was actually on the 11th floor of Belfer in a physics lab in a class in advanced quantum field theory, Gesundheit, just sort of seeing like the elegance of the beauty of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu built his world. It's like so powerful. I love sunsets and I love sunrises. I'm more often up for sunsets than sunrises. And I love birds and I love canyons. And this is yet another type of seeing the beauty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world and the elegance. It's so powerful. And a third piece, spoke a little about seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in history and feeling HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the beauty of his world, the beauty of science. Another difference between then and now is maybe our ideas have changed a little bit. I think you already see this in the Ramchal, the author of Messias Yisharim and Derech Hashem and so many other Sfarim in the 1700s. And it probably has to do with larger intellectual trends. I don't know that we look so much for proof. Ramban already talks in one place about how there are different types of logic, different types of thinking in different parts of human existence. But we look, as Rabbi Kelman speaks about, for seeing that things make sense and seeing that things are intellectually satisfying and plausible. It's the way the Ramchal opens Derech Hashem when he sort of builds his whole world of Jewish thought and machshava. He starts with certain axioms, certain basic ideas, and things flow from that. And I think that's what we're looking for when we seek to sort of on the intellectual side. We're seeking to see that things make sense. You know, proof is a trick, slippery thing. That was something that people in the Middle Ages were very, very excited about. It doesn't appeal to us as much. You know, you can always make an argument you can always find someone who will make an argument for some position. But what you're looking for is to see that this is, as Rabbi Kelman talks about, having permission to believe. That this is, it's logical, it's thoughtful, and it's intellectually satisfying. If you're interested in more of that, some of you may find Rabbi Kelman's Svarim appealing and satisfying, permission to believe, permission to receive. He talks about rational ways of thinking about Emunah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and rational approaches to thinking about the Torah and HaShemayim. Some of you may find, or Arya Kaplan writes, fantastic, he has so much, it's so thoughtful. And bringing it back to the core. Re'iya, Raya, proof, and seeing and experiencing, it makes you think also about the following. And I think it's important, very important balance. There's a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim when David HaMelech is giving his final words, the end of his life, to his son Shlomo, who's going to succeed him on the throne of Klal Yisrael. He says, Da'as Elkei Avicha Va'avdeihu. Know the God of your fathers, and then worship him, have a relationship with Lev Shalem and Nefesh Chafetza. You have a rich relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu if you start with Da'as Elkei Avicha. Two of the Rishonim who were very into thought and philosophy, both the Radak and the Chovas HaLevavos, they both say that phrase is a fantastic blend. Da'as Elkei Avicha. You're going to know, you're going to try to understand, you're going to explore who the God of your father. Exploration, trying to think about things is great. It needs to be based in a sense of tradition. You have to have the intellectual humility to realize, yeah, of course I'm going to try to understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu more. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave me a mind. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave each of us a great brain. We should use it to understand his Torah and to try to understand him. And at the same time, we have the humility to realize that I don't know everything that makes sense. just because I don't yet understand something doesn't mean it's not true. I have the humility and the sense, the rationality to realize there's so much more truth out there than I will know. There's so many more questions to think about than any person can spend time on. And to have that blend of being rooted in Masorah, and then with that basis trying to understand it more, it's a great blend. The Rambam talks about sort of three ways that we know things. He says a thoughtful person will know something to be true, either because logically I thought about it, I demonstrated it, or because I see it, I sense it, I experience it, or because of tradition. Three bases for knowing things. And that sort of, I think, ties a lot of what we're talking about together. The re'iyah and the raya, so there's the raya, there's the logical thought, and there's also the re'iyah, even the personal re'iyah. I've experienced things, I've felt things, I've seen things, or I have a masorah, as Rambam puts it, from Nevi'im or from Tzaddikim. People who I trust, people who strike me as people worth relying on. And maybe I'll wrap this up with that last point, with people. Because people also, I think, are a big part of the experience. Gemara tells us, Tanam tells us, that one of the most powerful ways that we experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through personal relationships with people who are close to Him. Lots of people claim to be close. Lots of people seem to be great. One of the ways that you can tell if someone's really great is when the longer you get to know him or her, lots of people look good, and then the more you get to know them, the more you see, not so impressive. Then there are people who, the more you get to know them over months and years, hopefully decades, they become more and more impressive. Sure, everyone has flaws, no one's perfect. But the humility is more real, the genuineness is more genuine, the authenticity, the real compassion, the real caring for other people. When you meet people like that, I've had the schus to meet people like that in my life, they're keepers. Those are the people you wanna follow. And those are people that can really, really raise you. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein writes in an essay, he says he was, as a teenager, he's a thinker, he was very troubled by different questions, didn't understand the morality of what Torah says about Amalek. It really troubled him for a long time. And then he says, and then he realized, he heard a story about Reb Chaim Brisker, and that solves his problems. What was the story? The story was Chaim Brisker, Chaim Soloveitchik. You may have heard of him as sort of the great mind, one of the great minds of Jewish people, brilliant analyst. He heard something unbelievable about Reb Chaim's heart. A lot of unbelievable things. Here's one. Reb Chaim Brisker, he was a Rav of Brisk. There was a period of time, I don't know, months, probably years, when he used to check his doorstep every morning when he woke up for foundlings. I mean, if there was a woman who had a baby and for whatever complexity couldn't take care of that baby, she would leave the baby early in the morning on Reb Chaim Brisker's doorstep, and he would take care of that baby. That was a long-term investment in a random child whom he did not know. Aaron Lichtenstein said, Chaim had a heart way larger than mine. He's a far more moral person than I could pretend to be. If he somehow made his peace with this question about Amalek, I'm good. And Aaron Lichtenstein has a postscript where he writes, years later, heard someone giving a speech, someone very self-important, and talking about putting down this whole, what the Torah says about Amalek. Aaron Lichtenstein said, and I wondered to myself, does he check his door every morning for families? I don't think so. Look for people who are profoundly, authentically, genuinely impressive people. And those people can guide you. Those people can lead you, like Rabbi Gorman was saying. And those people themselves, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, are a way of experiencing indirectly the grandeur of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we'll tie it all together with this bow. Everything we've been talking about, different ways of thinking about the blend of the proof and the seeing and the three sources of where we know things, the knowledge and the heart, the head and the heart, ultimately, that's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us. It's not just Kuzari, Rambam, Re'iyah, Raya. It goes back to basics, to the most basic mitzvahs, to the most basic expectations. We'll learn about it in 2 weeks from now. And we say, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want of you? two of the most basic pieces of that puzzle are rationally being conscious of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yira, and going beyond that to having a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to love, growing to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The head and the heart are meant to be blended from the start, Ad HaYom HaZeh. Floor is open to questions.
Then why do we mourn when they're destroyed in the first place? It has to happen. We don't mourn when the Romans started conquering Book of, we don't mourn when Haman started plotting the Temple of Purim, and we don't mourn when we got sent, so we became slaves in Egypt. So why are we mourning now? What's going to actually is going to lead to something good in the end?
That's a good question. I think it's an amazing question. It's the truth is that's a great question. By any time we mourn, let's say a Jew, Rachman Lassan, loses a close relative. So we believe in Tchiyas HaMesim. We believe that death is temporary, and as Daniel HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us through Daniel, ultimately the dead will come back to life. So, and we believe that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is ultimately for the good, although we don't see it in the moment. So why do we ever mourn? Why is it that when good things happen, we say Hatova Ameit, the bracha that talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good to us, and bad things happen, we say Dain HaEmes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a true judge. What do you mean? It's all good. Fantastic. So the answer is yes. Yes. It is true that in the long run, everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is for the good. And we, at the same time, recognize that right now it hurts. I'll give you a simple example. A parent takes a 3-year-old to the doctor for annual checkup, which includes shots. Not the kid's favorite part. Right? And the parent, a 5-year-old kid already knows what to expect. Oh no, now I know it's coming. Kid wants to bolt. Right? And the parent may have to hold the child so the doctor can give shots. In the moment, from the kid's perspective, this parent is cruel. Like, what are you doing to me? He wants to hurt me. You're an accessory to the crime. What are you doing? Now, from the parent's perspective, I know it hurts, and I also know that if you don't get your shots, it's going to be a lot more difficult down the road. It's painful, and the parent is doing it out of love. The kid doesn't necessarily see that. At a certain point, you mature enough that you sort of get, I don't like this. It's painful, and the parent means well. So, the Chazal didn't say make the same bracha whether you like in the moment or not. Chazal did say make a bracha either way. You're gonna reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a thank you when it's pleasant, and when it's painful, you're still gonna reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not necessarily with a thank you, but the recognition, I don't get it, and that goes back to that humility. I don't see, I don't feel either one. My heart, my head, neither one is telling me that this is good. I sort of know, in a big sense, doesn't really make sense to me. And a Jew can carry all those things together. I believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has my best interest in mind, and I don't see right now why. Baruch dynamics. We might have time for one very, very brief question. Ed Gorman, your call.
You talked about the fact that letting people that we love us and we know what's best for us to judge us. What do we do with the judgment of people that don't necessarily love us or we don't know?
It's a great question. It depends what it is. Many times, you can ignore them. Sometimes that's not an option. Sometimes the social dynamic, you can't. So you have to figure out, what does that look like with your space, if it's in your school or your neighborhood or whatever it is, how can you just be very real, save face, quote unquote. It's very hard sometimes. These are my 3 close friends, and I realize that they're not good influences on me. To just stop talking to them is very challenging. There are certain times in your life where it becomes easier. For example, when you finish high school and you're going off to Eretz Yisrael, and there's like the chevra that's going to this place. Maybe it's better to not go to that place. It's part of the calculation you have to figure out. But before those big transitions, to figure out how can I find a different path. There's always ways to start. It doesn't have to be cold turkey. It doesn't have to be cold turkey. And there's also, there is good in everyone. So to recognize that as well. But specifics definitely do matter. I'm happy to help you brainstorm particulars outside of the recorders. If there are particulars anyone needs help figuring that pathway out, happy to help brainstorm.
Trevor, thank you so much. We'd love to take more questions now. The next session is starting very soon. Right, Gore and I are both on this campus for the next month. We'd love to have the conversations over the next month and for many years to come.
Thank you, everyone.
How are you?